to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Today, our guest is Wendy Taylor. So I was introduced to Wendy via email through a former colleague, and at his suggestion, I watched Wendy's TED Talk prior to speaking with her. You know, like many of you, I've listened to dozens of TED Talks over the years, but nothing like this. This one left me first shaken, then teary, and then truly inspired. So Wendy was the managing partner in her law firm, owned a beautiful home, and had what seemed to be the perfect life. But in 2003, tragedy struck. She received a call while driving to a meeting that her home was on fire. And in that fire, she lost 9 of her beloved pets. So for months after that, Wendy describes her life as merely surviving. But what she really wanted was to thrive again. But how? How could she redefine her life? It was then that Wendy decided to start the West Place Animal Sanctuary to give animals a second chance at life. Recently, Deb and I had the honor of visiting West Place. It was a freezing March day, and Wendy took the time to give us a tour, introduced us to all the animals, and shared with us their backstories. And after that, we talked at length in her beautiful living room. And I have to say, Deb and I just felt so lucky to be a part of Wendy's world, if only for a brief time. Wendy has made a huge impact on so many animals and people. And today we are feeling so incredibly lucky that she is sharing her story with us today. So Wendy, welcome to our show.
Thank you both so much. And thank you for that beautiful introduction. That alone gets me choked up. Your words are very kind.
So excited to be talking with you today.
Yes.
Excited to be here.
Good, good. So yeah, we didn't want you to have to rehash that tragedy, but I do urge people to watch Wendy's TED Talk, and we'll list the link in our show notes. But it's also on the West Place website. So let's move to the time period shortly after you decided to open the sanctuary. I love the story of the baby birds you rescued. Please tell our listeners, if you will, about how the birds came to you and how you mixed practicing law with raising baby birds.
I don't know if I mixed it very well, but I certainly tried. So my TED Talk mentions the baby birds, but it even started before then. When I knew I wanted to start a nonprofit to help animals, I didn't really know what kind of animals I knew because I lost domestics, that I didn't think I was going to be able to bring myself to do that, at least not at the start. So one day I went out on my property and I found a baby bird on the ground, and she was alive, but she had just been born. Her eyes were still shut. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do. Where's the nest? And there were no trees around. And it turned out that the mama bird must have built a nest in the walls of one of my buildings, and I couldn't get to it. So I had no choice but to try to do what I could for this little baby bird, not knowing anything about baby birds. And I brought her in, did some research, fed her, didn't think she'd make it through the night. And the next morning, I can hear her peeping and screaming, and I open up her little binny, and there she is with her mouth wide open, her beak gaped, looking for food. And I thought, okay, I need to figure out how to do this. And lucky for me and lucky for her, I did. And she grew up to be an amazing, amazing bird and a wonderful creature. She was a European starling. They are direct descendants of the minor bird. And anybody who knows anything about minor birds realizes that they can speak. So I, unbeknownst to me, I can't even say I was able to teach her how to talk. She just listened to me so much that one day she started talking.
Wow.
And we did sentences. She knew about 30 or 40 words. We could play little word games with each other where I would start a sentence and she would be able to finish the sentence. She knew where I was going.
Wow.
Gosh.
It was amazing. It was like having a little toddler in the house. And her name was Skylar. And she just really opened my eyes to how not only beneficial to our planet and the environment that wildlife can be, but how much of a personal impact they can have on your life by just being here and sharing this planet with us.
Absolutely.
And it was after that I decided, okay, I think my first foray into a nonprofit and animal care is going to be wildlife. And she kind of turned me on to that. So I did start with the baby songbirds, which was probably not the brightest idea, but, you know, here I am in my business suit every day and baby birds are coming through my door on nights and on weekends. And I realized, well, these babies eat 10 to 15 minutes every day, all day long. I can't leave them and go to work. So I brought them with me. And if I had a standard office job, that might have gone over really well. But I didn't. I needed to be in court. I needed to take depositions. I needed to be in meetings. I needed to meet with my clients, with experts. And I thought, what in the world am I going to do? So fortunately, I was able to convince, I was going to say con, but convince my paralegal and my legal secretary to babysit all of these baby birds while I was gone. So I taught them how to feed them so I could go about the rest of my job.
Oh wow. My gosh. Just, it just makes me laugh picturing, you know, because I just picture, you know, everyone in their suits, you know, paperwork everywhere, and then just baby birds. It's like something out of a movie.
You've got most of the picture, but add to it the strange looks on everybody's faces as I walk through the door. and there you go.
Absolutely.
And I would pull into my parking garage and we used these little trolleys, little hand carts to take all of our legal boxes and our briefcases and everything to court when we have a trial. So that's what I would use. I would bring my little hand truck. And I would load up all of these plastic containers, we call them binnies, and they would just be stocked, you know, stacked 5-6 feet high.
Oh,
and I would walk that down the street into the lobby, get on the elevator, and take all the baby birds up to my office. And yeah, my contemporaries and my colleagues no doubt thought I was crazy.
It just shows your dedication and love for these animals. It's just such an amazing story. And I have to share with our listeners, when we were at Wendy's house, so we're sitting in her living room. And by the way, you were just such a gracious host. You know, we're having our coffee, chatting. And all of a sudden you hear this little peck, peck, peck. And it was her little baby turkey peepers.
Yes.
Peeping in through the French doors to the living room. And it was just the cutest thing ever.
You know, we could talk for hours about all of the amazing stories, but she's worth a quick mention. We've been around for 12 years. She came to us 9 years ago. She was one of the first, wild turkeys that was brought to us for rehabilitation. And two gentlemen had picked her up on a golf course. And for some reason, they thought that she was a baby duckling. And they decided to float her in a lunchbox full of water.
Oh.
And they brought her to me and opened up this lunchbox full of water. And they were so proud of themselves that they saved this baby. And they really almost killed her because turkeys do not like water and they don't know how to swim. So I pulled her out and I noticed right away she had mangled toes. And it wasn't an injury. It was the genetic birth defect where her tendons on her toes just weren't able to stay straight. And as much as we tried to straighten them and we put baby shoes on her, we taped her little toes down every day, the little cardboard shoes that we would make. But every time we would take them off, they would go right back to that weird resting position. And so it turned out she also had weak bones. She was just a general failure to thrive. She broke both of her legs and a wing. She had body casts most of the first year of her life. And she was given a 10% chance to survive. Well, when you met her just recently, she's about to turn 9 years old.
Wow.
I can't believe it. I thought she was so little. She was just so little.
Yeah, the failure to thrive in wild animals often is a size thing too. It affects the ability for them to grow to be full size.
Aww.
We have several of our failures to thrive that are much, much smaller than they should be in the wild. And it's part of why we use them as educational animals.
Sure.
We use them for teaching. We'll use them when schools come through. And they have a great life here, but they would never survive, not for one second, if we let them loose into the wild just because of their small makeup and all of the genetic issues.
Right.
Right. Ugh. Oh, well, we just loved her.
Yeah.
So I've been, cute. Oh, my goodness.
I've been talking about her ever since.
Yeah, me too.
She's awesome.
She is a good bird. She's got a lot of stories. She traveled a lot because of all of her broken appendages. Hmm. She's been to Martha's Vineyard, Block Island, New Hampshire, Vermont. She was at the Jersey Shore.
Wow. My goodness.
And she spent the first year of her life at my law firm.
Oh, wow.
She had to go everywhere with me. There, she couldn't stand on her own when her body was casted. So she had a lot of traveling. She's got a lot of miles under her wings.
Aw, she's so sweet.
I love that.
So one of the things that you talk about is the symbiotic relationship between the animals and the volunteers at West Place. Can you tell our listeners a little about that?
Absolutely. And I'll be honest, to some extent, I didn't even realize it. I go about my day and I see them interacting. I see the animals and the volunteers. And it wasn't until a real great guy here in Rhode Island, his name is Jim Hummel. He's an investigative reporter, but he also does feel-good pieces. He does happy pieces too. And he chose us to do a piece that he calls Highlighting Community Heroes. And he chose West Place and he interviewed some of the volunteers. And I listened to them talk about their relationship with the animals and their relationship to West Place Animal Sanctuary in general. And that was when it really, really hit me. And I thought, wow, I knew the impact that our volunteers were having on our animals, but I didn't appreciate the impact that the animals were having on our volunteers. And the bond is profound. We have an internal app that we use just private to all of us here. We have 53 volunteers.
Wow.
And it's a way that we all share pictures and videos and communicate with each other throughout the course of each week. And a lot of my volunteers, they're corporate. You know, they're in the corporate world and they're at their desk all day long. And they say, I just sit at my desk and I think about and fill in any one of our awesome animals, John the horse or Bobber the alpaca or Chester the turkey. And they say, I think about them and I wonder how they're doing. So we created the ability for them to be able to know how they're all doing, you know, almost in real time, in daily time throughout the course of the week, because they truly, truly care about them.
Yeah.
And the animals show it too. The animals have their favorite people and the people have their favorite animals. And even though I always let brand new volunteers know, this is an animal sanctuary and not a human sanctuary. And just because a lot of people, I want people to be here for the right reasons. They have to realize it is for the animals. And if they derive a benefit from it, that's great. But
right.
To be a true,
right.
true selfless volunteer, you don't come here for you. You come here for what the organization needs. And I've been so happy and pleased and all of those wonderful ways to look at it. I've been so blessed that all of our volunteers are getting as much out of it as the animals are. And to hear them say that to the camera when they were getting interviewed almost brought me to tears. That just broke my heart because I didn't know. They're here to feed the animals and clean up after the animals. And, you know, we're very busy. I work 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, and it moves. You know, I'm the executive director and the volunteer coordinator and the one and only staff person. And it's a very, very busy job. And, you know, I'm always doing 10 things at once. And I don't often get to observe those beautiful interactions that really move you. They'd move anybody. And I know they move our volunteers because it's how the animals con them into coming back week after week. they suck them in and they won't let go.
Oh, well, absolutely. Because Deb and I have talked many times since we left the sanctuary. I mean, yeah, Peepers was definitely a favorite, but you know, Andy, the blind goose, or, yeah, or Bobbert, or Chester, the turkey, or the beautiful peacocks. I mean, there was just, they're such beautiful ambassadors. Yeah. I couldn't stop thinking about them, and I was only around them for a few minutes.
Yeah.
We're very lucky. We've gotten all of the animals we take in are from some sort of cruelty, neglect, abuse, or abandonment case. So we take in the worst of the worst. So if someone calls us and they're moving and they just need to place an animal, we give them different avenues to do that. We try to help them find a right place. We work with the police departments, the animal control officers, the local SPCAs, and even the national ASPCA. And we take in those bad situations where people have just done wrong by animals. And we are here to try to make that right for those animals. And they come to us and they're in bad conditions. One of the goats that we got in a few years ago from a humongous animal cruelty case, 1,400 animals were found nearby here, just across the state line in Massachusetts, in various degrees of illness, sickness, malnutrition, and even death. And the ASPCA worked for 5 months. We removed the animals from the scene. I was there. I was on the transport team, the animal care team, the medical team. And I spent those 5 months working alongside them to try to get all those animals to a better situation. And we ended up taking in 67 of the 1,100 that survived.
Wow.
The goat I'm thinking of, her name is Sadie. And hopefully I can remember everything that was wrong with her. She was dehydrated, malnourished. She had an upper respiratory infection and pneumonia. She had bilateral conjunctivitis. Mm. Her horns were not disblooded properly, so they were actually growing back into her skull. It was horrible. And she had something called scabby mouth, where both of her lips were just giant scat. I didn't know until months later that she had these beautiful, soft, velvety pink lips, because they didn't reveal themselves until she started to feel better. So we take those animals that are on death's door, and we do everything we can to get them back to a state of happiness and well-being. And she is an amazing ambassador, I'll use your words. And we have so many of them here that when people come for those educational experiences that we offer, it's not a petting zoo. We're not a petting zoo. We're the furthest thing from it. But you can't tell that by looking at these animals. Mm. Because even though they all have these horrific stories and these horrible ways of coming into this world or being treated by humans, when you see them all here, you think they've been everyone's couch potato pet because they're all so well adjusted and well behaved and they look so amazing. So we've been very fortunate that we can have that outcome for so many of these animals, and we're very proud of our ability to be able to do that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that is wonderful. After we met that day, I actually went and looked up that case that you had referenced, and I don't even think I made it past the first paragraph. The description of the conditions. So I can't even imagine being there and seeing it.
If you had the same reaction to my TED talk, which you mentioned in the introduction, I can only imagine what you were feeling when you were watching that, because that was heartbreaking. I was recently a keynote speaker at an annual meeting for one of the large rescue organizations around here. And I put on a presentation and it involved video. Mm. And I wanted to, and it's a domestic shelter, a dog and cat shelter. And I wanted to share with their shareholders and board members. I wanted to share with their board members and all of the people listening, you know, that farm animals, I'm going to say, are people too.
We agree.
Matter too. And I had clips of the Westport case, and there were about 100 people in the audience, and you could audibly hear people crying.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
And thank goodness they were the video was behind me, because I knew what was on it, and I was there. I lived it in real time. And it will really open your eyes to to some horrible animal cruelty and animal neglect that, that does go on in this world.
Which I just don't understand.
Yeah, I just don't understand
how you can...
I don't either. We're getting ready to get into another rescue. Our local ASPCA here in Rhode Island seized a few pigs from... Actually, they used to be a farm, and now they're calling themselves a rescue. This rescue, who allegedly rescued these two pigs, the pigs needed rescuing. And
wow.
The local SPCA came in and took them. And they were overweight, but poorly nourished. And I know that doesn't sound like that makes sense, but they weren't being fed the right thing. So even though they were fat, they weren't good fat.
Right.
So
right.
We actually have to change their entire diet. They got treated for infections. They've got, one has a broken tusk. The other has overgrown hooves and is having difficulty walking. So we're actually getting ready to embark on taking in our first group of pigs. And we're excited. And at the same time, you know, we're sad for them because what they obviously had to go through. But we're looking forward to being able to bring them back to the good state of health where they will get to live out the rest of their lives here.
Wow.
That's amazing.
We try our best.
Yes. And it takes a village for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
It really does. I mean, even from day one, as I mentioned, when all I was doing was handling baby birds, I couldn't do it on my own. It took my law firm to pitch in and help make that happen every day. And yeah, we have over four dozen volunteers here throughout the course of the week. And if it wasn't for all of them helping out, this is not a one-man show. It's, it started out as a small grassroots organization, but it is that old adage, if you build it, they will come.
Mm.
And you don't realize one day nobody knew who you were. And the next day your phone rings dozens of times every day, 365 days a year. People looking for advice, people looking for animals to be rescued, you know, people reporting certain things to us that we have to turn around and report to the authorities. It's always something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to some of the ambassadors at the sanctuary, when we visited with you, you told us about Carl. Can you talk about Carl's impact on you and on the sanctuary?
I thought you were not going to give me anything difficult today. Sorry. Yes, Carl. Carl was another animal that came from the large cruelty case that I mentioned. He was a sheep. He was officially dubbed the sickest animal that survived what people called the hellhole. And he was so sick that we couldn't treat him. The medical team couldn't treat him on location. We had to ship him out to Tufts Animal Hospital. And he spent 8.5 weeks. He spent over 2 months at the hospital.
Wow.
He was so sick. They just couldn't get his infections under control. They couldn't figure out what medications the infection would be susceptible to. And so we didn't know if he would live. And the ASPCA wrapped up the case after 5 months and they called me and they said, look, we're pulling up our stakes. We're ready to move on to the next animal rescue. And we have to ask you, this sheep named Carl is in the hospital. If he lives, can you take responsibility for him? So of course. And it was the vet that called me. And I said, oh, you named him? And she said, yes. And I said, why Carl? And she said, he just looked like a Carl. And then she said, oh, and by the way, he spells it with a K. Okay. So he became Carl with a K, and he did survive, and he came to us, and he got a lot of special care when he was here because he did have another infection flare up that we were able to treat here on site. But he got a lot of hands-on care from everybody and became as friendly as anybody's dog. And that is not an exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
You called his name and he would come running. You pet him and he would almost fall asleep while you were giving him a scratch. And he was not shy. And anytime he would see an iPhone or a camera come out, his face would just come right up and just glow. And you could swear he was smiling most of the time. So he was so well adjusted. for a sheep and so well behaved that we open up once a year on or around the anniversary of the discovery of that giant animal rescue case. And we open to the public so that they can come in and they can meet the animals. We have the only animals that stay local. Most of the other animals, some did go to local rescues around the area, but they all went up for adoption.
Oh.
And all the rest of the animals were shipped out to the Midwest or to Florida, upstate New York, I believe took some of the horses. So we were the only ones that actually got animals that kept animals. So right there and then, so many of these animals became ambassadors for that case. And Carl definitely was. When the news stations would come out to film a promo for the day, he was always on camera. It was always his face. Whenever we made the front page of the newspaper, he always managed to be in the picture. I don't know how he did it. The article might not have had anything to do with him, but somehow he's in the picture. And whenever I would have to bring an animal somewhere for an educational event, it would always be him. He was just so easy and so personable, and he met so many people, and he has so many selfies with so many humans. He was just really, really great. And unfortunately for us, he was older than we thought he was. And with everything his body went through, I was hoping he was only about 8 years old. And it turned out this winter that he was about 10 years old or so. And although sheep can live longer than 10, they can live to 11, 12. We even had one that lived to be 14. But because of what his body went through, he finally shut down, unfortunately for us. And he passed away just a couple of months ago. But we all talk about him as if he's still here.
Right.
And he had so much of an impact. And I think what will be the hardest for us is when we open our doors again this summer. And
right.
All of those people come to visit with him like they do. They make a pilgrimage here to see their Westport, to see how their Westport friends are doing, to see how those animals are doing from that case. And when we have to break the news to everyone that he's left, I know it'll break a lot of hearts.
And I'm so sorry we didn't get to meet Carl with a K, but it sounds like he left such a wonderful legacy.
He really did. I'm not exaggerating, thousands of animals come through here in the last 12 years. And he left such an impact on me that he had these little curls in his wool, and some of the wool up around his neck was really tightly curled. And I asked him if I could take a little bit of it, and I sent it off, and I actually had it turned into a piece of jewelry. Someone with a lot of talent out in Portugal made me a ring, and it's on its way to me. She sent me a picture the other day, and it is gorgeous. She did such a good job, and I'm going to wear that every day.
Oh my gosh, what a great way to honor him. And not that you need a reminder every day, but you'll have it right in your hand. Yeah, I love that. To switch gears a little bit, when you were talking about Carl, you said the word impact. In your TED Talk, you mentioned having what you refer to as an impact footprint. Could you tell our listeners what this means to you and why it's so important?
Absolutely. I wish I remembered my TED Talk word for word. You put me on the spot. I think if I started from the beginning, I could probably repeat it for you. But yes, I did. I talked about an impact footprint, and you hear about people's carbon footprint, right? Your electric company might send you a reminder. This is your carbon footprint. Do you want to try to make it better? And I feel the same way about what people do when they're here on this planet as ambassadors of Earth. And yes, we're here to procreate and raise a family and contribute to society. And that societal contribution is, to me, more than just being a coach for your kid's soccer team, or more than just doing a really good job, you know, in your career. To me, that's also what you can give back from a really, really selfless means, because everything else we still do for ourselves. Even if we're doing something for our families or our job, it's for ourselves. And I felt like describing it as an impact footprint would be a good way of getting people to just look at their life, their value, their legacy, you know, to find a way to go out and not only give back, but to create your own story of that footprint. What can you do while you're here? What kind of legacy are you going to leave behind? Because as I mentioned, what we do for ourselves during a course of a day, it's exactly that. It's usually for ourselves, for our family. And so much of that is gone when we leave this planet, when we're gone. But what we do for others, be it other humans or other animals or other parts of this planet, that remains as our legacy. And I love good quotes. And Winston Churchill had a good quote. He said, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give." Mm-hmm. And that impacted me because that made me realize I don't want to be remembered for what I got or what I took. I want to be remembered for what I give and for what kind of impact I can have while I'm here. And a good point of my TED talk, it was all about volunteerism and giving back. And hopefully people will listen because I think it's a good one. And I know I'm biased and completely opinionated about that, but I like to think that it may have an impact on you if you give it the 19 minutes. And I think it will help people to start to question how big your own impact footprint can be. And I know that all the people that we have as volunteers here, they can answer that question because they're here every week and they're giving back and they know what kind of impact they're having, you know, not just on these animals, but especially with the wildlife that we put back out into the world. We do 250 wildlife every year, and our spring and summer get very busy. And we rehab them, we let them grow up here, and we teach them how to be wild, and we send them on their way so they can go back out into our environment and do what they're supposed to be doing. And it's always great. One of our release days is always such a great day when we decide that we're releasing a certain species of animal that they're ready to go. And that's us seeing our impact go off back into the world and be what they're supposed to be and have the life that they're supposed to live. And I know I can see the smiles and the tears sometimes. I've been doing that, you know, year after year after year, doing those releases. I get used to it, but to see our newer volunteers crying because the animals that they took care of were gone. And then we have to explain to them they are wildlife and we did our job. We as humans did the right thing for these animals and now we've got to let them go. And it's so nice to see that happen every year because we can be really proud of that. You know, we can put our impact in numbers, not just in feelings, but we can put it in numbers.
Although it must be bittersweet to see them. I mean, it's a good thing, but at the same time, you know, it's sad to have them leave.
It always is. You know, most of them we do in big groups and we try to stay very hands-off with the wildlife. It's quiet place around them. No cell phones, no music, no videos, no anything like that. Talking in low voices because we don't want to have a human impact on them. That's really important not to impact them in that way so that they don't become accustomed to humans or dogs or animals. They need to be wild.
Yeah. Right.
But every once in a while, one just stands out. There's nothing wrong with them. They're going to go as well, but their personality pops through at a really young age and everybody starts to name them. And they get really attached to them and they in their heart of hearts, they really think that this certain goose or this certain turkey is going to stay with us.
Right.
And inevitably nature is going to take over and they're going to leave. And for me, those are still the hard ones. The ones that have followed me around, the ones that always greet me first. Cuddle up to you. And, you know, you're trying like not to be nice to them. You're trying to have an arm's length approach to them and just feed them and provide them care, but not bond with them. They're bonding with you. They're forcing the bond. Mm. And those are the ones that are hard when they leave. But, you know, we're happy. We hope that they go out and have a normal life, you know, have what they're supposed to have. And we help encourage that on our end as well. We don't ban them, so we don't track them. They have no GPS on them, but we actually grow all the natural food that our species of wildlife will need. We grow it here. So we start them out on a commercial product. It's the cheapest, it's the easiest. We can buy it in 50-pound bags. But when they're ready to go out into the universe, We've gone out into the local area and we've brought back wild plants of all the different fruits and berries and seeds and nuts and everything that we know they're going to find out in the wild. So we introduce them to their natural food before we let them
oh, that's awesome.
Be released. And that gives us the ability to at least say we've given them the best chance at survival out there, because they're not guessing once they're no longer under our protection. We've taught them everything they need to know. And the other thing we do along those lines is we talked about Andy the blind goose and Peepers the turkey that can't be released. Not only do we use them for educational aspects of what we do here, but they foster some of the wildlife for us. So we as humans are going to do the best job that we can, but we're still not mama turkey, mama duck, mama bird, mama goose. Mm-hmm. If we have a goose here or a turkey here or a duck here that we can give a whole bunch of babies to, and she can teach them how to preen themselves and how to swim and how to do all this, how to find food in the yard, out on the property before they go, that gives them that extra leg up in the world as well. And we have so many great animals. Peepers, Andy, we talked about. Sam, we have a great, she's actually a domestic goose, but she helps foster all of our wild geese. And we had another great wild goose that wasn't releasable. Her name was Pinky, and she fostered a whole bunch of babies last year. We have so many animals here that work so hard for us.
It's
amazing to see it. It really, really is, to see that maternal instinct just kick in, and they look at us and just look over at a group of babies and go, "Hey, we've got this." And we love it. It helps us. We're not as busy. We know right. that they've got it, and we watch them walk around. We've got 8 acres here, and we have a giant pond. We have it was 300,000 gallon pond.
Wow.
That runs 365 days a year. Costs a small fortune to do it, but it's necessary because we do so many waterfowl. We have so much wildlife that we rehab. So we give them the tools. We just can't be the best mom. And our foster moms can do that for us. So they step in and they take over where humans have to leave off. And they should be applauded because they do such a good job. And we're always so moved by them. And to them, they're not working. They're not doing anything. It's just nature.
Yeah, right? It's just their innate wisdom and it's what they do.
Yeah, and it makes them happy, it makes the babies happy, and it makes us happy. And it's such a good kind of full circle experience here. And they help. The animals help us help them. And I love seeing that. I love to see how we can all work in conjunction with each other.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, so how can people interested in volunteering at West Place get started? You know, what do you look for in a volunteer, and what kinds of tasks would they be doing or would you want them to be doing?
Oh, that is an excellent question. We have all kinds of volunteering opportunities, and we also have summer internship opportunities. So if I have a minute at the end of this, I can touch on that too. It's a great experience for college and high school students looking to maybe get into something like this as a career, be it animal husbandry, veterinary medicine. We've got a lot of things that they can learn here. But our volunteer program, we offer so much to so many types of skills that people have. You might not even realize you have a skill to volunteer here. Obviously, the cream of our crop is our animal care people. But we need so many other kinds of volunteers. We have an amazing group of people we call our green thumbs. I mentioned we grow a lot of food here for the animals. We have a 2,000 square foot wildlife berry garden. We have a small orchard, and we have three giant 30 or 40 foot long greenhouses that run all year long. And our green thumbs work in all of those areas. And they also help basically keep the sanctuary looking good for all of our educational tours and all the times we're open and all of our fundraisers. And we need handymen. We need people that have the green thumb, have the landscaping type of experience, painters, people that can do light carpentry. We actually sometimes we just need somebody that is willing to drive around and refresh our pamphlets that we put out in the area. And people can help in so many ways. We have people that have artistic skills, and they donate to our gift shop, and they give us so many of our great, amazing products. Everything that we have to offer are things that have been created by people, or they either come from the sanctuary, or they come from our volunteers, or they just come from really talented local people that want to find their own way of giving back and helping out the animals. And it really does, because if people make a donation to us, you know, certain donations will get them a certain gift in return. And they're beautiful, absolutely beautiful gifts. I mean, we have painted wine glasses, and we have stained glass. We have charcoal drawings. We have quilts. These are all made by people. And we need marketing and public relations people. I would love someone who knew QuickBooks so I didn't have to relearn it year after year. There are so many ways people can help out. You know, even if someone just wanted to sit at a desk and answer the phones for a day, all of those things help out our sanctuary as a whole, or even just take something off my plate so I can focus on something else. Another way people can get involved, if they really want to have a good financial impact, become a board member. Whether they live far away or they live close by, we can find the right board member position for them based on their skill set. They can help us tremendously as we continue to grow. And, you know, we're getting bigger and bigger every year, and we have to have our board help us continue down that path and to stay ahead of where we need to be, and to know where we're headed so that we always continue to give the best possible care to these animals.
Let's actually talk a little bit about the internship program, because you mentioned that when we were talking with you, when we were there, and that, like, it made me want to be a high school student again so that I could come do that. So talk a little bit about that, and, you know, what they can be doing, and also, you know, what it is that they're going to learn while they're there with you.
So thank you for asking. Two of our educational offerings that we have are our internship programs. And one is a program that runs throughout the school year. So a high school or college student could be an intern here, and they would work alongside of the volunteer. So the volunteer shifts are 2 hours once a week. They can work alongside the volunteers and do hands-on animal care, or even if they wanted to go into horticulture, they could work that once a week alongside of our green thumbs. And they would get that direct contact either with the animals or with the greenhouses. They would learn a lot throughout the course of their 2 semesters in school. The other internship program we offer is more intensive because we fit it into a smaller period of time. It's our summer program, also available to high school and college students. And they would come more than once a week, and more than 2 hours. So our program runs longer during each day, and the students could come almost up to every day of the week if they wanted to. And during those programs, we make sure they get wildlife instruction, farm animal instruction. We also serve as the local lost dog holding facility for 2 of our local police departments. They would be able to work with the domestic animals in the kennel. They would be able to work with our green thumbs. They would work with our painters and our carpenters, because it would teach them everything they needed to know about running a zoo, running a sanctuary, running an animal nonprofit, running a veterinary clinic. It's always the big picture. So we don't just teach them one skill. We teach them all the skills. We have guest lecturers that come in. I guess you could consider me a guest lecturer as well. So as executive director, I'll sit down with the kids once a week, and maybe we'll even just go over my TED talk or a podcast that I've been on. And that will give them the background information of why we do what we do and why it's so important to continue to have organizations like this that do what we do. And it's a really, really great program. Some of the students are here to get their community service hours. Some get college class course credit for it. And we've even had some where colleges are actually funding the kids to be here. So it's a good experience. I encourage everybody to look into that. Happy to send over an application. We're actually taking applications now, and we will take them through the time that the program starts, and we'll bring on all qualified people until we get full.
Wow. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, we enjoy doing it. We've done it a couple of years now. I think this is going into year number four that we've done this program, and it gets more and more popular each year. And we continue to make it better and better too.
Excellent. Well,
so Wendy, if our listeners were so inclined and wanted to make a donation to West Place Animal Sanctuary, how can they do that?
Thank you for asking that. I think we try to make it easy. There are a lot of ways. They can go right onto our website. We have a tab. It says Give. And you can click on that and you can learn about a whole host of things. And obviously, you know, oftentimes the easiest way is, let's say I'm going to donate a dollar amount. They can click that right through our website. They can do it through our Facebook page, our Instagram. And it'll go right through PayPal. They can mail us. They can do it any way that's easiest for them. But the interesting thing about that Give page, and I'm glad you allowed me the opportunity to bring it up, we have young children that want to find a way to give. And I give those parents a lot of credit because they teach their children how to be good human beings and responsible citizens at a really young age. And it gives them an idea of what they can do. We've had little kids run a cookie sale, a lemonade sale. Someone found a program where they could collect shoes and they donated them for funds. They've gotten us dog beds for our kennels. Even college students who may not have a lot of money to give, but we have one, I think it's called the Coffee Club. And it's a really, really easy way. Just change up your coffee order at your local barista and, you know, take that extra shot of espresso off and donate it to us every day. And so you're still getting that coffee, but you're helping West Place out at the same time. So we give a lot of options and we're welcome to hear anybody's other great ideas too.
Oh, that's great. This has just been just such an honor talking with you and learning about the animals. I feel like we need to dedicate this show to the animals who've inspired Skylar, the starling, Carl, the sheep.
Peepers.
And of course, we have to give a shout out to Peepers. But thank you, Wendy, so much for spending some time with us. And we know Deb and I have already talked about, well, we'd love to come back again and this time help.
Can't wait to have you. We would really look forward to that. And thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to share what we do with everyone out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been our pleasure. Thank you. You can read more about the sanctuary at www.westplace.org. We will put that along with the link to the TED Talk in our show notes. As always, our podcast can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and our own website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And Wendy, thank you so much. I'm just so inspired by you. I didn't think I could love my animals more than I did, but I do.
Yeah.
And, thank you for saying that.
And it's just such an amazing place. So everybody, just go check it out.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.